You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast series 4 episode 16 tonight, and I just want to start tonight's show by saying a big thank you to everyone who's been in touch with us on social media over the last 4 or 5 days in regards to our Roddy Collins special. It's been an absolutely huge hit with our listeners. We've had well over 1,000 listeners now since it was launched last week, and as I said, there's been loads of you getting in touch and leaving your feedback on social media, so we really really appreciate that. But we've got another good show for you tonight. We've got a couple of guests coming on tonight. We're going to be hearing from James Rogers ahead of that huge game for Dundalk at the Aviva on Thursday. And we'll hear from Andrew Dempsey of ExtraTime.ie. He's also on the Cabinteely media team. And we're going to be speaking Cabo in depth tonight and what is happening at Cabinteely behind the scenes, because the wheels have well and truly come off their promotion bid this season. But I'm delighted to have another special guest co-host with me this week. And it's a man you'll know well at this stage. Gary Riley joins me on BTS now. Gary, how are you keeping this evening?
I'm not too bad, Kieran. Thanks again for having me.
No, great to have
Yeah, I really enjoyed the last one, so I was happy to join you tonight.
Yeah, and did you get a listen to the Roddy special yourself?
I most certainly did. I listened to it in the car on the way to Athlone there on Friday, so I really enjoyed it. I thought there's a lot of people on Twitter saying that they would have liked another hour. I thought I had probably 75 minutes or whatever it was enough for Roddy. But no, I was actually looking for more myself, so it was... It was a great old listen on the way down, and sure, look, he's a great character, and he was great to listen to listen to him talk about his career over the years. So really enjoyed it, we'll say.
Yeah, and the Rod Pod 2 is in the works. We are going to be hearing from Roddy again on the show very, very shortly, so you will get to hear more from Roddy Collins listeners that wanted to hear more. But an hour and 15, as you said, you'd think that'd be enough, but no, not with a man like Roddy Collins. What a story he has, and I'm looking forward to bringing more on his career to our listeners over the next little while. But let's start with tonight's show. As I said, two interviews to come, but we'll start with the Premier Division review and a double helping for Shamrock Rovers this week. They helped themselves to just the 10 goals, a 6-1 win over Waterford. We won't really talk about that one too much. We'll move on to the more recent result. Their 4-0 win over the Dundalk reserves, Gary.
Yeah, I watched the game there on Sunday evening, was it?
Yeah.
On RT, yeah, it was good. Very look, professional win enough for Rovers. Dundalk didn't really have any of their big boys out, and it really showed. I'd say Rovers would have had enough in the locker to beat them, even with a stronger Dundalk team. But I thought Rovers were quite professional. They did what they needed to do, and the game swung up at half time. And I don't think there was any fear, certainly not in my mind, that Dundalk would actually come back in the second half. And I think that proved in the end. There's a lot of talk about people looking to have the game moved and stuff like that to help Dundalk, because the game was sandwiched in between two European ties. But nah, not for me. Not a professional setup like Dundalk. I think they've had plenty of help, so I wouldn't have been interested in moving the game on. Plus, with the condensed season, like, we're running out of time to get all the games in that need to be got in with FAI Cup and stuff like that as well. So
yeah,
that was a good performance by Rovers. Did what they needed to do and extended their lead again.
Yeah, I take your point there on the potential postponement of that match, but I know I'll be accused of bias, obviously, with my Dundalk hat on here, but I think the FAI should be doing everything they can to help the Irish clubs. I know, as you said, they've got plenty of help along the way at Dundalk, but when you look at the Faroes, their association, they postponed Keys game ahead of their trip to Ireland on Thursday. And I know people are saying Dundalk don't have to travel out of the country on Thursday, But given the dark cloud that's been over Irish football this year with everything that's come out in the media and champion football, I think we could do with a good news story, and Dundalk qualifying for the group stage certainly would be that. So I think the FAI should be helping them every way they can. But as you said, Rovers thoroughly deserving of the win. They'll be thoroughly deserving of the title as well. People can have their own little debates on whether it's a real title, obviously, with the 18 games. But the fact is, Rovers haven't been beaten yet by any side. So 18 games, whatever else, they're the best team in this current league, no matter what the format, and they deserve their title. But just from the Dundalk point of view, obviously 11 changes from that win on penalties in the Europa League the previous Thursday. And I actually thought Dundalk actually looked quite good on the ball. I thought the quality on display in this game was really, really high, particularly after having watched Harps and Cork a couple of hours beforehand. My God, that was a dreadful game. But I thought Dundalk were quite good on the ball, and Ottawa as well, he showed plenty of skills going forward, but defensively he wasn't interested at all, and that's where the first two goals came from. He didn't track his man. Rovers had a 2v1 down the right hand side every time. My God, they punished Dundalk.
Yeah, they really did. I thought sorry, what was that chap's name?
Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah. I noticed him early on in the game, and he was making some real progress on the left hand side. He was causing a lot of problems for Rovers, and I think he'd be good if Dundalk had to hold on to him. But I don't think, like, Dundalk were playing all right football, but was it the most incisive play? Was it the most play that was going to actually cause Rovers problems? Rovers seemed comfortable enough throughout the game, and as you said, Rovers got a lot of success down Dundalk's left hand side, and that's where, as you said, that's where the two goals came from. But Dundalk were under massive pressure, and even the first goal, while it was sloppy enough, I felt it was coming anyway. I thought Rovers were making the better player, or coming up towards Dundalk's goal in a better way, so I was no surprise that Rovers were up 3-0 at half time.
Yeah, and look, Rovers would have been travelling here expecting to win against a second string Dundalk outfit, but you still have to go to Oriel and put in a performance, and there would have been pressure on Rovers to do so given what happened at Dalymount Park on Friday night. Some turnaround for a Bows, 2-1 win, two goals and added time to grab the win against Derry.
Yeah, it was some shock, wasn't it? I couldn't believe it myself. I think the Bows Twitter had a picture up of Derry being 1-0 up in the 93rd minute and some seconds on top of that, but Bowes to come out with a 2-1 win, it's fantastic, and that's great for them. But surely Derry be looking at themselves going, how did they drop 3 points, never mind two? Like, they should have been far more professional about that. Now the foul for the penalty, it was a penalty, but it was just poor from Derry that they got into that situation in the first place.
Yeah,
close it down a bit better and take the 3 points back up the road. So they didn't do that, and then the real sucker punch for Derry in the last kick of the game, almost a good cross in by Breslin and right into the mixer. You know, there was that ball really opened up the chance for Bowes, and then the hoo-ha in the 6 yard box was buried by Wright. So look, it was a big surprise, but great result for Bowes to keep in touch with Rovers.
Yeah, and it was an absolutely phenomenal cross, I have to say, from Breslin for that winning goal. But as you said, there was an awful and almighty scramble in there, and it was Andre Wright that eventually turned it home. But Derry, yeah, you're right, they'll be absolutely kicking themselves after that. And it's put a huge dent in their season. They really needed a win to try and get some momentum built up. But they're closer to the bottom than they are to Europe at the moment, so they've got a lot of work to do, Derry. It's not been their best season at all. Let's move on to Waterford, and I think a lot of people have said this was probably a shock result coming in off the back of a 6-1 defeat against Shamrock Rovers. Okay, look, anyone can go to Tallaght and get hammered like that, but confidence would have been low. They were taking on a Sligo team who would have had ambitions of pushing Waterford down that table and cementing them European places. But what a goal it was from Matty Smith to win this game. And Waterford fully deserving of the result, by the way. They played really well on the day.
Yeah, like it was a great goal to win a game. Very deserving win based on the goal itself. Look, I think Sligo, based on where we all had them pegged, or a lot of us anyway, certainly myself, had them pegged for the start of the season. I thought they'd be down in the mixer with Harps and Cork City, messing around relegation spots. So I think for them, they might have been looking for a result against Waterford, but Waterford were going to come out with a reaction. You get slaughtered 6-1 at home in Tala. I know it's going to Tala, you're going to the league leaders and stuff like that, but at the same time Waterford are still third. You kind of want to be putting it up a bit more to the league leaders, and it just rolled over for the 6-1 loss. So I think a reaction was expected for Waterford, but it was a brilliant goal to win it out. And Sligo, I think, based on where we all thought, or certainly as I said myself, thought they would be, I think they should be fairly satisfied with where they're sitting at the moment in sixth.
Yeah, and I should just point out as well, I know I said Waterford were well deserving of their win there, but Sligo did have chances, and Murphy in goal was absolutely brilliant for Waterford, and not the first time this season. And if Waterford do manage to get into Europe, I think they'll look back at the signing of Murphy and some of the points he saved them this year as a big, big part in that. But it was a brilliant goal from Smith. He's really caught my eye this year, and I really like this Waterford side. I'd love to see them do well. They've got some lovely, lovely players in there, and if they can just keep that group together and add to it, you just never know over the next couple of years. But myself and John, we touched on it on last week's show. It was very important for Waterford to get out there and make their intentions clear in regard to who was going to take the team for the rest of the season. And they've made that decision. Fran Rockett, local man, he was on the coaching staff under John Sheridan. He's been appointed manager until the end of the season. And he gets a win in his first game. They might just get a little bit of a bounce from that now.
Yeah, definitely. Like, look, I think it's well known that new managers come in and a lot of the time there's a positive bounce, which certainly seems the case here. But I suppose over the next couple of games it'll show the real proof how much of a bounce they actually get. But look, John Sheridan, I think it's probably good that he's not knocking around after all that stuff with Vinnie Perth. How true or all of it was, it still wasn't great to be looking at, and it was only messing. So look, they have a long trip to go for Derry, and that'll be a tough game. Derry will be looking to bounce back from that shocking loss, but Waterford, with their new manager, will put it up to them as well. So it'll be a tight game, but I'd say Waterford will look to continue after that 6-1 defeat.
Yeah, I'm told Fran Rockett is very, very popular with the players down there, and I was looking at some of the Waterford groups online as well, and he's very, very popular with the fans as well, been a local man from Tremor. So best wishes to him, and as I said, a win in his opening game. If he can get a run going now, he could do very, very well.
It's a very positive start, so yeah. Certainly look to keep that going now. You know, there's only about 5 games left, so surely they'll be looking to push on and keep ahead of Dundalk. I know they have a couple of games in hand, but Dundalk do, so it'll be tough for them, but they're in and around, and
they'll be happy.
I'm sure
with
they'd
that.
Like to stay where they are, absolutely.
Yeah, and speaking of managers, one you were slightly critical of a few weeks ago when you were on this show was Stephen O'Donnell, but a big win here for Pats in a Dublin derby against Shells, and the game was absolutely lit up by a goal from Christy Forrester. That was vintage Forrester, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. It brings me back to the days before we went across to England. An absolute scorcher of a goal. Just kept cut in from the right and smacked it in, which was, it was great to see, because he had such a good time with Pats the first time. I know he went over to the UK and did all right for a period. But he's back now, and there was a bit of there's an expectation of him to continue where he left off a few years ago, which hasn't come to fruition. But look, it was a brilliant goal and a great way to set Pats on their way in the derby. So they should be happy enough. I'm still not convinced with them, and I'm still not convinced with Stephen O'Donnell. But look, you can put that down to a few things. With the coronavirus and stuff like that, so I suppose I'll go a bit easier on them this week.
What about Shells though? They are certainly in the mix for relegation now. What's their next move?
Well, Shells, yeah, I really didn't think that they'd be down this low. I really thought that Sligo and Shelburne would be switching places. I thought Shells would have You know, they've a decent enough squad there. I'm a big fan of Gary Deegan. Great player, great pro. And really marshals the midfield area. But look, they're not doing too bad. They're not getting blown away in games, but they still need to start picking up points. Like, I didn't think I'd be saying it, but here we have Cork and... Harps are only 3 points behind. So it's time for Shelburne really to be looking over their shoulder and start putting some form together to get over the line to stay up and not fall into a relegation battle. But they're very, very close, so they need to be looking.
Yeah, I think, as you said, very, very good point. They're not been blown away in games. It hasn't been the defence that's been the issue. It's been scoring goals, and I just don't know how Ian Morris is going to solve that problem, because Kilduff, I'm surprised with his lack of goals this year. I thought he'd get, you know, at least 5 league goals, but I think he's only notched 2. And look, we've touched on it many times on the show. I don't think his backup is up to grade there. So is there a way maybe Morris can get the wingers and the fullbacks higher up the pitch, get them to start chipping in with goals? I don't know, does there maybe need to be an adjustment of shape? But then if they do that, do they make themselves more vulnerable at the back? They're in a tricky situation there at Shells now. As you said, they're starting to really look over their shoulders. So we'll keep an eye on the Reds over the next few weeks and see what they do to adjust their situation. But let's move on to the final game of the weekend in the Premier Division. And it wasn't a pretty watch at all, but quite a significant late goal from Raf Curtaro in this one. Harps 1, Cork 1. The goal from Cork, a deflected effort from Dylan McGlade.
Yeah, look, it wasn't... I was hoping, actually, we didn't have to talk about this game because it was that poor. I watched it all on Sunday before the other game. And look, it wasn't great watching. Harps are 1-0 down, which probably was deserved. I thought Cork were playing, or at least trying to play like they wanted to win. I thought Harps were trying to bring it down a bit and make it into a bit more of a battle. Now I know that's what you have to do when you're down there. But it was a good bit of play. But I think it was Dara O'Connor that broke through and fed the ball to Midlade, who finished all right. Now, I know it was a deflection, but look, when you're down that end, you need all the luck you can get. But sweet little finish from Raf Curtaro to equalise. He was a bit of a baller back in the day. He still got it, although he's pushing on, to be fair to him. But yeah, lovely little finish. Poor old McNulty had no hope.
Yeah, he might have let us down here on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, but we'll forgive him for that. That was a brilliant a brilliant goal from Raf Curtaro. I thought Harp started the game the first 5 or 10 minutes really well. They were putting a lot of intense pressure on Cork, getting the ball high up the pitch, getting crosses into the area, trying to really pin Cork into their own half, and they did that. But as soon as Cork managed to weather that storm, I thought Cork, as you said, attempted to play some nice football, and they very much probably deserved a half-time lead. But in the second half, as you said, Harps made it into a little bit of a battle, and look, they get the long-range goal from Curtaro, but Cork weren't just able to push on from that first half performance. That's got to disappoint Neil Fenn, but for me, you know, a draw probably a fair result in the end, but it wasn't the best game of football I've ever seen.
No, certainly not. But look, I think both teams live to fight another day, so
yeah,
I think they'll be happy enough with that. Probably Cork and Neil Fenn will be a bit more disappointed. They went the long journey. A fair play. I saw some Cork flags up in the background in the stream, so fair play to them for making the journey. But look, when you're down that end, you don't. A draw is as good as a win when you're playing your nearest rival. So,
and if I was going to push you now for who your favourite is for bottom spot, would it be Harps or Cork?
I was going to say Cork. I think I said Cork a couple of weeks ago, but I probably switch over to Harps now based on what I saw. I believe Cork are trying to do a bit more in their attacking sense. They seem to have stopped some of the goals that they're conceding. So they looked all right defensively on Sunday, whereas Harps just didn't want to play football, it appeared to me. It was, as I said, it was a battle, and I know Harp started all right, but I never really considered that they were going to maintain that and actually put a consistent amount of pressure on Cork throughout the game. So I'd have to say Harps look favourites for the drop for me. Considering their players, like they have a good bit of experience here. You know, Ryan Connolly, I know he only came on in the second half. And so did Quartaro. But Quartaro made a change to the game. Connolly made a change to the game as well. So they have the squad there that has the experience in the league. So that could stand to them. But for the moment, I'll have to say Harps.
Yeah, well, you'd be in the minority because we ran a poll after the game on the Between the Stripes Twitter account. At Between Stripes, if you want to give us a follow, folks. But 63% voted for Cork as their favourites to finish bottom.
Look, yeah, like, it is probably a toss of a coin. I as I said, I'm leaning towards Harps at the minute. Look, I'd say that's probably a few fans from other clubs voting for Cork to get the drop. But look, I just feel Harps, they're not trying to affect games in the right way, so I think they'll go down fighting.
Right, let's move on to the First Division review, Gary, and we'll start with the big top of the table clash from Friday night, Bray against Drogheda. It ended 1-0 to the Drogs, a goal from Mark Doyle, and I'm not going to say I told you so, but I did tell everyone the Drogs would win this one.
I didn't really have a team to win this game. I thought of Bray at home, and after them giving us such a piss and last Friday week, I thought they'd be looking to push on and pretty much tie it all up. But look, it was a great, good result away for Drogheda. They did what they needed to do to keep in touch with Bray. So look, fair play to them. They've been grinding out a few results, and it was them that started off. Cabantidi's demise with that 5-1 hammering a few weeks ago. So look, they're top of the table now. They did what they needed to do. It was a good win for them. And I suppose from a pure Longford perspective, it kind of keeps us in touch as well with the top two. So I was kind of happy enough with that. But yeah, a good result for Drogheda, and they kind of lay down the marker now, come and catch me type idea.
Yeah,
so
very much so.
Fair play to them.
Before the game, a lot of people were saying to me they were looking at the run-in for Bray and Drogheda, and they thought that Bray had a slightly easier run-in, but you could maybe make that argument on paper, but when you look at it, I think Drogheda, maybe four of their last six games are at home, whereas Bray seemed to have a lot of away games in their final few games, so I definitely make Drogheda title favourites. They've been my favourites from day one, and I'm definitely sticking with them after that big result. Let's move on to the El Clasico. It's now 17 unbeaten for Longford against Athlone, but 4-0 maybe a little bit flattering on the night, Gary. I know you were there as well. Obviously, I was commentating live for the Between the Stripes Mixler account. What was your thoughts on the game overall?
I thought it was an okay performance from the town. Great goal to start with. I know you'd have to question the lone keeper for the first one.
Yeah.
But what a ball from A. Dervin.
Unbelievable.
Ball just spilled out, pinged it straight into Rob, who made the right run and put it home. But I thought Athlone had improved. I know Longford only bet them 2-0 at home a few weeks ago. I thought Athlone weren't fantastic, and I was kind of disappointed with Longford's performance. But it kind of shows that Athlone have improved. I thought they kept Longford out quite well. They weren't exceptional going forward, but I know it's a worse result, but I thought the performance was much better than the reverse earlier on. Dean Byrne, I thought was very good. Forced the own goal and also got the penalty for Town, so which Sam Verdon slotted away. So, like, it was a good result for Longford Town. They did what they needed to do in an El Clasico, which is what you want. But it wasn't seriously strong performance to put Athlone down. It was some nice bits of play at certain points in the game that got the four goals, rather than a onslaught, let's say.
Yeah, and Athlone very easily could have gone in level at the break. Delaney flicked a great cross. It was a free kick from Manning, and a beautiful delivery he gave in, and it was flicked on by Delaney, and he hit the crossbar. So easily could have been one apiece at the break. I don't think you could have argued with that, because despite Longford getting the early goal, they didn't really kick on and didn't create an awful lot in the first half. But as you touched on there, individual moments in the second half just changed this game. Unbelievable skill from Dean Byrne to win the penalty. Verdon tucks it away. He had a good game on the night, Sam Verdon. I think he's scored in the last three or four Clásicos in a row as well. Then more skill from Byrne leads to the own goal, and a goal from Carl Chambers off the bench. And them final two goals came in the spell of a couple of minutes as well, where Lee Duffy was sent off as well. So everything just fell apart for Athlone in the space of a couple of minutes. And look, that easily happens when a team is down the bottom.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I know there was a bit of jibber jabber on Twitter about it. I felt very bad for Lee Duffy. I couldn't see a thing wrong with what he did. I don't know if he kicked out. I don't think he did. But I couldn't believe it when he got sent off. I thought the ref was going to have a chat with him if there was a free at all. But a straight red card for Lee Duffy, which you'd have to really question. And I'm not really sure what the ref was seeing there. Now, I know he's, 5 yards away from it, and I was up in the stand. So fair enough if he saw something else. But it looked like a very nothing challenge on Dean Zambra. So... look, as you said, when that's the type of thing that happens when you're down there, your luck's not on your side, it really isn't. So, but look, Athlone, you know, they've been making progress the last few games, and I thought their performance didn't merit a 4-0 loss.
Yeah, let's move on to Galway against Cove, and the Galway juggernaut, it has halted stop, because Cove, they get a late winner here through, an early goal from Ian Turner, while Mikey Place was sent off for Galway in the closing stages. Big upset here.
Yeah, definitely, certainly after Galway's run. Was that five games on the bounce that they had
won? Yeah, they won all five games under John Caulfield. They lost their game in the Cup against, I think it was Shells, wasn't it? But faultless in the league up until now.
Yeah, definitely. They were really putting in a string of performances together, and you could really see that John Caulfield was making some form of difference to them. They're really doing a good job and pushing up the table. But great result for Cove. Kind of needed for Cove.
Yeah,
I think they'd lost the last three before that one. So. They really needed that win to keep in touch with the rest of the teams above them. I think there's 11 points between Cove in 7th and Athlone in 8th. So that would have kind of cut Cove off from the rest of them if Galway had won or drawn there. So good result for Cove, and certainly probably a surprise for Galway at home. And certainly it's no help that Mickey Place was sent off as well. Not the type of thing that you need to be doing when you're trying to push up the table.
Let's move on to UCD. After an off-colour second half display against Longford, they got back to their good selves and scoring plenty of goals. A 5-2 win away from home against Shamrock Rovers 2. Maddie on the score sheet again, a double from Bishop and a double from Whelan. Longford kept Maddie and Whelan very quiet down at Bishopsgate last Monday, but you can't keep those players quiet for two or three games in a row, as John Breyer predicted on last week's show. He said that he thought Maddie and Whelan would be the difference in this game, that they'd have too much for an inexperienced Rovers 2 side, and he was proven right. A really good win for UCD to get them back on track.
Yeah, definitely. Look, they would have been disappointed with their performance the week before in Longford, 1-0 up at half time. But Longford really came out and put them down, so they needed a response, and they really got it. And I know Shamrock Rovers too are playing are not playing too bad for a reserve team. They're not getting railroaded in a lot of the games, but I suppose UCD would have been happy to have them in the next game after that loss against Longford. Yeah. So they really went out and put out a performance, and I think I think it was 5-1. I think it was only a late consolation goal for Shamrock Rovers too. So
yeah, two really good free kicks Rovers scored on the night.
Yeah, so fair play to UCD. They did what they needed to do, and it keeps them up there with the rest of the clubs that are trying to get in for promotion. So look, they're still there in the playoff places, and they should be happy enough with that. But yeah.
Yeah, so 7 goals at Talla. There was 6 in Stradbroke, but 5 of them went the way of Wexford. A 5-1 win for Wexford against Cabinteely. Unbelievable result, but we're going to be having a good chat now in the next couple of minutes about Cabinteely and what's gone wrong there. We're going to be hearing from Andrew Dempsey of ExtraTime.ie. He works on the media side of things at Cabinteely from time to time as well, so no better man to speak to about the latest goings on up in Stradbroke. But Gary, when you seen this result coming through, what was your reaction? Unbelievable stuff, wasn't it?
Certainly it was. I couldn't believe it. Like, poor old Wexford, they haven't been at a whole pile this year, you know, shipping lots of goals and stuff like that. But they really turned it around, and then to go up to Cabinteely, they really put it up to them, as you can see by the result. But there were 2 up within 20 minutes, and from my understanding, the Cabinteely weren't really much of a match for them. So look, great result for Wexford. Puts them on the right track, and certainly a good result against Cabinteely, who have really fallen apart in the last few games. So look, good result for Wexford, but I think as good as it is for Wexford, it's certainly far worse for Cabinteely.
Is this result a real clear indictment that there's something more going on at Cabinteely, something not right perhaps behind the scenes? I'm not sure if you caught Pat Devlin's comments a couple of weeks ago, before one of the games, I think it was before the Drogheda game, where he came out and he said that the club's budget had been slashed by 50% this season, that they lost 4 key players last in the off season, including Rob Manley. They were never replaced. And he seemed to cut a very, very disgruntled and frustrated figure. And you just wonder if that's now, that atmosphere has been carried into the dressing room and onto the pitch with these results.
Yeah, look, it's going to be difficult for Cabinteely no matter what. Now, they had a great season last year. They got into the playoffs and then fell over against Drogheda after beating Longford on penalties. So they probably would have been looking to push on and mounting a real challenge. And that's what they did for the first part of the season, but it's really gone totally sideways since they came back. They went on a nice little run, but they really haven't pushed on at all. They've really gone the complete opposite way, and they've shipped a couple of games there. They've shipped a lot of goals. They lost 5-1 away to Drogheda, and they lost 5-1 again there the other night. So look, it's not fantastic, and you know, I do feel bad for Pat Devlin. He's probably under a lot of pressure, and not from the club, but more as regards getting players in, the finances and the type of players he can get based on the finances that's available to him. So yeah, look, it's going to be very difficult for him, but it certainly does point to something else going on in Cabinteely as a League of Ireland club. Interesting to see what happens between, you know, now and the start of next season.
Yeah, and I know you've been reading up as well about this potential American takeover. Again, a lot of uncertainty there. Is it on? Is it off? Is it genuine? That's hanging in the air above Stradbroke as well at the minute. So there's just an awful lot going on behind the scenes there, and it's certainly not contributing to the on-field side of things at the moment.
No, certainly not. Like, I know I wouldn't know a whole pile about the American chap. I think Dennis Lukens is his name. I wouldn't know a whole pile about the person. But when there's all of that talk going on and the Cabinteely are having financial difficulty, the League of Ireland side with their budget, they're having trouble. Coupled with the fact that they let extremely strong players go, Rob Manley, who was the top scorer in the league last year, gone to Longford, Jack Tweed, starting centre back for almost the entire year last year, he's gone as well to Drogheda. So look, those players are hard to replace, and then when you add that in with a serious budget cut like that, you're going to be really struggling. But that doesn't seem to have gone... I know that wouldn't go down well anywhere, but it seems to have let fester in the club in recent weeks, and that seems to have translated out onto the pitch.
Yeah, and I suppose no better time than now to get Andrew on the line, and he might give us a bit more info on what is happening at Cabinteely. So it's all to play for in the First Division still. Promotion, the title, everything's still up for grabs. But one team that has fallen off the pace dramatically in recent weeks is Cabinteely. And joining me on the line now is Andrew Dempsey from ExtraTime.ie. He's the go-to man on Cabinteely, sees most of their matches, and we're going to try and find out what's happening up in Stradbroke. Andrew, welcome back to the Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Okay,
and how's things? Not too bad, Andrew. I know you listen to the show most weeks. You probably would have heard Ethan Fitzpatrick a few weeks ago with his prediction that Cabinteely would fall away, and I was totally gobsmacked when he made this prediction. But unfortunately, from a Cabinteely point of view, he has been proven right. One win in their last eight in all competitions, and if they lose this weekend against Cove, they could fall outside of those playoff places for the first time this season. What is happening at Cabinteely?
Yeah, I suppose, look, there's probably a number of reasons, and I suppose the results haven't been great, and to be honest, the performances haven't been much better. You know, it's, I suppose, in a sense, they've actually been decimated from injury or by injury since the restart. I suppose there's no denying that. Obviously, they lost Michael Kelly. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of your listeners would know Mick from his time at Longford.
Yeah.
He was a real leader in that group. He got injured, I think, against Longford.
Yeah.
The 3-1 game, and I suppose since then they've conceded 18 goals in the league, and before that, if I'm not mistaken, they only conceded 4 times in the league before that. So look, he's obviously been a huge loss, and look, obviously losing the likes of, you know, Jack Hudson, I think he's probably one of the most underrated defenders in the league. He's really good, and obviously he hasn't been around since the restart. He's been a huge loss, and I suppose, as you can see in the last few weeks, that has been the case. Conor Keeley's only returned, and look, they've just been destroyed by injuries, and I suppose we're only seeing the results of it now, but, you know, it's just, I suppose, in a sense, it feels like the wheels are coming off really quickly, but then again, they could easily just, you know, find their way back in the promotion picture with one or two good results.
Yeah, very much so, and they've got a very, very experienced man at the helm there in Pat Devlin, but I know you work at Cabinteely Games, so you obviously speak to him quite a good bit. There's been a lot of talk about some of his post and pre-match comments in recent times. It seems maybe he's a little bit disgruntled at the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I suppose I'm sure a lot of people will have seen the video that was posted on, this was Cabinteely's social media accounts. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, before the Wexford game anyway, and I suppose it was revealing, it was honest, and it was a little bit explosive at times, I thought. Obviously, he mentioned that obviously there was a 50% cut in the budget at the club, and look, I suppose, obviously losing 5 great big players from last year, obviously Rob Manley went to Longford, Jack Watson went to Bray, Stephen McGuinness went off the Bowls, Yuta Sasaki went back to Japan, and Jack Chu went off to Drogheda. So I suppose it was always going to be a difficult year for Cabinteely, but they just couldn't really replace those players in a sense. And look, obviously Pat, he made his feelings known in that interview. He was one question, he was speaking for about 3 minutes after. So I don't know what's going on there. Obviously something is unsettling them behind the scenes. I'm not sure what it is, but look, I suppose it's probably just disappointing in the sense that it seems to be impacting on their league form.
Yeah, and obviously they made the playoffs last season for the first time in their history, and they won through a round of the playoffs as well, knocking out Longford on penalties down at City Colin Stadium, as it was then last season. So they would have been looking to build on that this year, and they look all set to do that. They looked absolutely guaranteed for a playoff spot at the very least. We were talking about them as genuine title contenders on the show here, but as you said, the wheels have totally come off, and they're in total danger now of missing out on the playoffs altogether.
You know, absolutely, and look, if I'm not mistaken, they're playing Cove on Saturday evening, and if they're beaten in that game, they could drop down to as low as 7th. Obviously, that's, you know, that could only happen if Galway United beat Longford and at Bishopsgate on Saturday evening, which, look, hopefully isn't the case from our point of view. So, look, the loss of Mick Kelly's been huge. I don't think there is any denying that. Look, I suppose the stats are there to back it up as well. As I mentioned, the only 4 goals conceded in the league before that, and then obviously conceding 18 goals since then. Look, he's been a big loss, and look, I suppose from a Cavan Daly perspective, you can only hope that he's going to come back sooner rather than later, but it doesn't really seem to be the case. And look, obviously there's been a few other players that I suppose have, well, the word be, I suppose been impacted by Cavan Daly's lack of form as a team. Obviously Shane Burns hasn't been scoring as much as he was previously, so look, they just need something to get them back ticking. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure obviously Pat Devlin and his coach and staff will be hoping they can, you know, muster up something together really quickly, because look, the playoffs are there for them. Look, as we've seen already, they're more than capable of beating most teams in the division, so look, it's certainly not, you know, all lost for them, but they need something to turn for them quite quickly.
Yeah, and strangely enough, taking such a heavy defeat against a team down towards the bottom like Wexford, 5-1, it was one of the shock scorelines of the season. Perhaps it's something like that actually might spark the revival of Cavan Daly. They've hit rock bottom. They have to regroup now. Maybe this is something they needed, despite the poor run of form. It's a strange thing to say, but maybe they need to just start putting the pieces back together gradually now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, to be honest with you, I actually thought the draw against that loan was when they hit rock bottom. I thought that was probably the one night when, you know, you thought, look, it couldn't probably get worse than this. And obviously the Wexford game came and went. Obviously they lost 5-1. And I'm sure people will be watching it going like, what is after happening? But obviously Cavan were really poor in the first 20-25 minutes. They came back into the game. I think they went to a 4 at the back rather than with a 3 that they started with. And look, Kevin Knight scored a penalty, and for all the world it looked like they were actually going to level, if not push on and win the game. Then all of a sudden, within 2 second half minutes, Carl Fitzsimons scored twice at the back post, literally 2 carbon copies of each goal. And look, by the time Patrick O'Sullivan scored the 5th, it was kind of immaterial really, because the game was well over. But it's obviously been a disappointing few weeks for them. They need something to turn, and so the longer they have to wait for it to turn, the more of a chance they're going to miss out on these playoffs, which, you know, it's going to only be it'll be an absolute hammer blow for everybody at the club, I suppose.
Yeah, and I know Pat Devlin, in that interview you mentioned a few moments ago, he brought up the huge impact the COVID stoppage had on Cavan Daly this season. It hit a lot of teams. It hit every team hard, in truth, but Cavan Daly were absolutely flying, and as we said, they looked like they might go on and win the title, and then all of a sudden they were halted, and maybe they don't have the same sort of resources as other clubs, so maybe it was even a little bit more difficult, as we've touched on a few times, as particularly given the injuries they had then after the restart and the players they lost in the off-season as well. Is there a big concern around the club about the huge impact that COVID has had? Is there any maybe concerns over next season and how Cavan Daly might operate as a club? Because as we know, they wouldn't have the biggest fan base at the moment. They're trying really hard to build that off the pitch. And I know they've got their long-term strategic plan and everything, and it's great. But I suppose that's all been thrown out the window now by COVID. I know you can say that about most clubs in the league, but
yeah. There's
a lot of reasons why it's a really unique challenge to Cavan Daly at the same time.
Yeah, no, look, I suppose as regards to next season, I'm not sure. I haven't actually heard anything official or unofficial. You know, look, obviously, sometimes you might hear one or two things, but look, I'm actually brutally honest, I actually haven't heard a thing. But yeah, look, obviously, COVID has impacted them greatly. And I suppose in that interview, Pat mentioned that the budget was cut by 50%. I can only imagine the impact that COVID has had on that now. I can, you know, only assume that it's probably been cut again, because, you know, obviously if you budget for, you know, a non-COVID year before that, you're probably expecting to, you know, have a bit more money to play around with. But obviously COVID has meant that there's little to no money around. So look, and obviously the lack of sponsors at the club, as Pat mentioned in that interview as well, it's been an issue. I suppose it is an issue for most clubs in the first division. I suppose you'd now probably know that more than I would. And look, I suppose the club just needs to unite in a sense. Obviously, as Pat said in that, I'm referring to that interview quite a lot because I thought it was revealing, you know. But yeah, look, Pat is, he's been vocal in the last few weeks. So look, I suppose from his perspective, he's probably just hoping that you know, something's going to change and everyone's going to get behind them again. But look, God knows what's going to have to happen after this. God knows what the even the first division is going to be like next season. You know, will we have crowds? Will we not have crowds? So, look, it'll be interesting. But I suppose Cavan Deely, look, obviously they've been impacted by it, but I don't think they've been as impacted as, I suppose, they're probably impacted the same amount as most clubs in the division, I suppose.
Yeah, and God knows what the first division will look like next week, never mind next season. It's a bonkers league this season. But look, final question before we go. I know there was a couple of weeks ago a few whispers in the media about a potential takeover at Cavan Deely from maybe a group in America. Have you heard anything on that, or has that gone quiet in recent weeks?
I suppose, it has actually gone quite quiet. Obviously, when I think it broke in the Irish Times, I think it was before the Longford game, it broke, and I suppose, obviously, foreign investors, we've heard a lot of it before in the league, obviously. I suppose we can only think only so recently back as the whole lot loan thing, and I suppose how that ended up. I suppose, from an outsider looking in, obviously, you're probably right to feel sceptical about the whole operation if it does come to pass. But yeah, no, obviously, as you said, as you go back to the question, no, look, I haven't actually heard anything, but look, if something does happen, I'm sure we'll be made aware of it. But look, at the moment, I've actually heard nothing, you know.
Strange times at Cavan Deely, it has to be said. Andrew, thanks for joining us on the show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, Kieran. Thanks for having me on.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Sticking with the First Division now, Gary, we'll move on to this weekend's previews. Drogheda, big win against Bray. They'll be very confident of picking up another 3 points against Athlone.
Yeah, certainly. Look, Drogheda have gone into top spot now, so they need to be looking to push on and try and put a bit of space between them and Bray. And I think Athlone is a good place to start. As I said, I thought Athlone played quite well on Friday last against Longford, but I think Drogheda will have too much for them at home, and probably win by two or three goals to zip.
Yeah,
but this is exactly what Drogheda will be looking for after nosing ahead.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And if they get the 3 points, it could be a big opportunity to pull even further clear at the top, because Bray have a tricky assignment on their hands. They have to travel over to UCD coming in off the back of that big high-scoring win over Shamrock Rovers 2. Could this be a banana skin game for Bray Wanderers?
Well, look, at UCD probably haven't hit... Well, I'd say that they're happy enough with their season. You know, it's a new, young squad. I know you think that... That they're probably looking up as opposed to looking down behind them. But it'll be a tough game for Bray, and a great opportunity for Drogheda. Bray have to go to the bowl and put in a serious performance to be able to keep in touch with Drogheda. So there's a huge amount of pressure on Bray, and there's also pressure on UCD, because they're going to be looking to keep in toward the playoff positions. So there's a lot on the line for both clubs. Probably Bray a bit more than UCD, but it'll be an interesting game. It'll be a very, very tight one in the bowl.
Yeah, I'm going to throw my hat into the ring here. I'm going to side with UCD for this one. I did suggest on last week's show I wasn't sure about Bray, despite as impressed as I was when I seen them twice this year against Longford, and I have watched some of their games online as well. I've been impressed with their performances, but I did just question whether they have the stomach to go and win this title. And I thought the results the other night at home against Drogheda was probably the first indication that maybe they don't. And I think UCD here could be a very, very tricky opponent for them. So this could be a big, big night in the title race in favour of Drogheda. But you just never know in this division. Let's move on to Wexford against Shamrock Rovers 2. Great opportunity for Wexford here to pick up back-to-back wins.
Oh, definitely. This is a great... You know, they really got a bit of life into them after that win last week against Cabo. So great opportunity to leapfrog Athlone. Now, unfortunately, it's leapfrogging Athlone into probably equal nothingness. But at the end of the day, it's still another win, and it does put them one position higher. Look, it's nearly like two leagues now at the minute between the top seven and Athlone, Wexford and Shamrock Rovers too. So look, they'll be looking to get a couple of wins together, and it's a great opportunity for them. So look, Shamrock Rovers too won't lie down either, but I think Wexford will be certainly buoyed by that great win last week.
Yeah, I just think this season that the main goal for Athlone and Wexford was definitely to finish ahead of Shamrock Rovers too. We can mention Rovers too, the positive performances they've put in, they've picked up points here and there, but without wanting to be disrespectful, they are a development side, they're a reserve side, and for Wexford and Athlone, they've been in the First Division for many, many years. Obviously, they've been struggling in the First Division for many, many years, bar a season here or there where they had very prominent highlighted success, but for them to finish below a team coming into the league, their first season, Rovers too, I think they'd be very, very disappointed and probably a little bit embarrassed by that. So I think the goal for those two clubs this season was to finish ahead of Rovers too. At the moment, it's Rovers too that are propping up the table, and I think Wexford will want to confirm that, but by beating them on Friday night down in Ferry-Carrig. So I'm gonna side with the Wexford win there. Let's move on to Cove against Cabinteely. Cove coming in off the back of that shock win against Galway. Cabinteely in free fall. Can Cove add to their woes?
Oh, it certainly can. I think it's a great opportunity for Cove to potentially leapfrog Cabinteely in the table. It's a great opportunity for them to push up and try and get into those promotion or rather those playoff spots. Cabinteely, as we've said already, they're a shadow of the team they were immediately after lockdown. And play resumed. So Cove have a great opportunity here. They went on a bit of a bad run for a little while, but that was a great result against Galway, as we said. So they'll be looking to put Cabinteely down it in St. Coleman's Park. But great opportunity for them to get up there, and it'll be a good positive. If they do get a result, it'll be a great boost for them. Yeah. With the final three games to come.
Let's move on to Longford. They host Galway on Saturday night at Bishopsgate. Again, this will be live on LTFC Plus. And I've seen a couple of tweets from James Donnelly, the media manager there at Longford today. It looks like there's been a bit of work carried out at the stadium. So the capacity now over 5,000. And I believe they're doing the bits of paperwork that have to be done in terms of licensing and that. But it looks like they could have 200 fans in for this game. If it's not going to be this game, it's going to be certainly down the line. But really positive news there for Longford fans.
Oh, definitely, and it's a huge game. Huge game for Longford in particular. They need to be keeping in touch with Drogheda and Bray. So it's a huge game for them, but it's not going to be easy. Galway, as we saw, went on a brilliant run there since John Caulfield came in. Now, that one odd loss against Cove last week is the only blemish on their record so far under John Caulfield. But Longford at home really need to put in a serious performance. They didn't start well against UCD. They were putting a bit of pressure on UCD, but weren't really making hay when they could. So they'd be looking to get a strong start and get into Galway straight away from the get-go. And look, it'll be brilliant to see more fans being able to go to games, and fair play to the staff at Longford for getting the seats in and stuff like that, and making the right changes to the ground to allow more fans in. So fair play to them.
Yeah, and of course Galway fans that can't be there, check out ltfc.ie, sign up to the LTFC Plus stream. You'll get access to the e-match program, and with that you get free access to the match stream live on Saturday from Bishopsgate. Myself and Tony G will be live on commentary, so hope you can join us for that. Let's move on to the Premier Division. There's a game tonight, Sligo against Derry, so we'll skip over that naturally. That is a big game though, Gary, isn't it? It's a chance for both teams to get their maybe stuttering season up and run. You'd probably say Sligo have been a little bit more consistent than Derry, but 3 points could be huge for either side in that one.
Oh, definitely. Look, Sligo will be happy to be above Derry. They're their rivals towards the north. But look, it's not. It hasn't been a great season for Derry at all. And that loss last week to Bowes, you know, that has knocked the stuffing out of you completely. When you thought you were getting a good performance in away in Daly Mount, I think anything other than a win tonight for Derry would really just leave them there, down swimming in the mid table, doing, you know, and also ran in the season again, which isn't great for Derry at all.
Yeah, I don't know really why I'm looking for a latest score. It's not like it'll make a difference by the time the people listen to this, but 34 minutes in, it is still scoreless there. You're probably expecting that to be a fairly cagey game, and that's the way it's playing out there at the moment, so we'll keep our eyes peeled on that one as it goes on tonight. We'll move on to Derry again. They're playing Waterford next. Again, it's a little bit hard to analyse this one, given we won't know the result of their game tonight until a little bit later on, but a long old trip up to the Brandywell for Waterford, but they're coming in with confidence after that win last time. Again, we don't know what type of confidence levels Derry will carry into this, so just a very brief analysis on this, Gary, maybe.
Well, look, it's going to be a long old journey for Waterford. Obviously, you know, it's hard to know depending on the result tonight, but if last week is anything to go by, Derry will be needing to really up their game.
Yeah.
And I know Waterford are ahead of them, but it'll be a tough old game for Waterford heading up that journey, and Derry will probably need a good reaction.
Yeah, let's move on to, again, the team that's playing tonight, Sligo. They travel to Tala to take on Shamrock Rovers, but even if Sligo win tonight, it's probably difficult to see them going to Tala and getting a win, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Like, look, fair play to Sligo. They're doing all right so far. But, look, they'll probably be outclassed and outplayed in Tala the way Shamrock Rovers are going this season. You said earlier that they haven't suffered a loss at all and only two draws. They're a class act, and look, yeah, it appears that they'll be well worth their title come the end of the season. But look, Shamrock Rovers, it's nothing is said and done yet, so Shamrock Rovers will be looking to bury anyone in their sights and try and clinch the title as early as humanly possible.
Let's move on to another big one. It's Cork against Pats. Cork, maybe they feel they left points behind against Harps, but again, we touched on it wasn't the best performance in the world. It was definitely better than they've shown in a lot of games this season, but if they were to replicate that performance or even slightly improve it, would it be enough to get something against a Pat side who've blown hot and cold this year?
I don't think so. I think this is a huge opportunity for Pats to put a couple of wins together. They have to head down to Turner's Cross, which isn't handy, but there'll be very few at this game, so Pats have a good opportunity to get back-to-back wins, and hopefully it might give them a bit of a boost going into the rest of the season, and a nice win for Pats will put them up the table and also mean a lot of trouble for Cork. I think Cork will definitely certainly be boosted by the point. I know it wasn't, they'd probably be disappointed that they left a couple of points in Ballybuffet, but I'd say they'd be all right with the point coming home. So they'll be looking to put in a performance against Pats, who, as you said, blown hot and cold. But it's a great opportunity for Pats, which I think they'll take.
Yeah, I fully have to agree with you there. I think this result and this performance will say a lot about Pats and where they are at the moment with this project under Stephen O'Donnell. Because for me, if they don't go to Turner's Cross and pick up a win, and they should probably be picking up a convincing win given how Cork have played this year, it might just say a little bit about the character on the side. Maybe they're missing a few battle-hardened pros, a few real veterans, a few leaders, a few voices in the dressing room. And you know, O'Donnell was that type of player. Obviously he was brilliant on the ball, brilliant midfield player, but he was a real leader and a real character among that Dundalk team and as well at other clubs that he played for. So wouldn't surprise me maybe if in the off season he's brought in some what we would call decent technical and flair players. You know, Georgie Kelly, a good goal scorer, come in. He's got a couple of nice technical players around the park like Forrester, but wouldn't surprise me in the off-season if we see him going for some more battle-hardened pros.
Yeah, definitely. There's a, you know, Pat I thought Pats would, before a ball was kicked this year, I thought Pats would do a lot better than they have. And they brought in some good players. Now, not everything has come to fruition, but they still have the potential to do a lot better than they are. And as you said, they'll need to be going down to Cork, winning possibly convincingly. I'm not sure they'll have the stomach to definitely bury Cork in Turner's Cross. But look, I think if they do stay where they are or do a bit better than where the table shows they are at the minute, then they'll have, or probably Stephen O'Donnell will have, some form of mandate to go and get a bit more of an experienced player in the league, and probably harden them up a bit. But look, time will tell on that.
Yeah, and of course, it'd be very interesting to see what happens in the off season, because there's going to be an awful lot of Dundalk players out of contract potentially. Look, if they qualify for the Europa League, there might be a few more pounds flying about to extend players' contracts. But given everything that's happened in the last few months, there maybe some players might want to move on. It's hard to know, but given O'Donnell's links with Dundalk, it wouldn't surprise me if we see one or two maybe go in that direction. We've already seen it with Robbie Benson and Georgie Kelly. I wonder if he can just use that Dundalk connection a little bit more. But interesting times at St. Pat's. Big, big Dublin derby coming up at the weekend. Shells against Bowes. Bowes, they're just hanging on in the title race. There's still the slightest of glimmers there, but it probably is gone for them now. But they'll not want to be turned over by Shells here.
Oh no, certainly not. And I'm heading over to Tolka Park. It is a shame that Tolka Park or any ground can't fully open for this game. It would have been a huge one in Dublin. Look, it's a big game for Shelburne as it is for Bowes. Probably Bowes, they're there clear enough in second place, 8 points behind Rovers and 7 ahead of Waterford, so they're fairly safe in second. As you said, I think the league is a bit beyond them at the minute. But no matter where they are in the league, neither team will want to lose this. So it's a huge game for both. Probably a bit more important for Shells that they keep a bit of breathing room between them and Harps. But you could nearly say that all of that goes out the window between Shells and Bowes. There's such a rivalry there. So look, Bowes will probably want to win it as well for, you know, separate reasons to league position, and of course, you know, Bowes were brushed aside by Rovers on both occasions this year, so they'll probably want to have one out with Shells in Tolka Park.
Yeah, I'm gonna push you for a prediction on this one. I side the way of Bowes. I just think they look more well rounded than Shells. As I said, I think Shells need to maybe look at trying to get more bodies into the box and find ways to chip in with more goals, because that's been their big issue. I see this being quite a cagey game, a Dublin derby. Tackles will be flying in. There'll probably be a lot of nothing happening, you know, but a high tempo stuff, but maybe the quality mightn't be the best. But Bowes showed their ability against Derry to grind out a result from an impossible position. I think if this becomes a battle, I have to fancy Bowes, and they'll have a little bit more confidence going into the game than Shells as well. So I go Bowes. What way do you go for this one?
I think it'll be a draw. But if anyone's going to win it, it'll be Bowes. They'll have, if it does go, as you said, in a battling format, it'll probably be a draw. But Bowes just have that extra bit of quality across nearly every area of the pitch.
Yeah.
To win that game. So, look, and if you push me, I'll say Bowes as well.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Final game we're going to preview, then we're going to hear from James Rogers ahead of Dundalk's massive game at the Aviva on Thursday against Key of the Faroe Islands Europa League playoff round. You're talking maybe 3 million on the line in this one, so a big, big game, and we're going to hear from James very shortly. Dundalk at home to Finn Harps. Only one way you can be looking here, really. No matter what happens in Europe, you'd really have to fancy Dundalk, even if they put out maybe a much changed side. Surely they'll have too much quality for Finn Harps.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think Dundalk, they're a bit down the table, but as I said, they have a couple of games in hand. So a good performance against Harps, they should be able to put them down, put them to the sword quite easily. Okay, it won't be the easiest game for Dundalk. You know, if Harps will make it into a battle, which is what they have to do in the position they're in. But Dundalk will just have simply too much quality to be stopped by Harps. The only thing about it would be that the game comes after Dundalk in Europe, so depending on how that goes, it might be interesting. It might be a good time to play Harps, but we'll have to wait and see how it goes on Thursday night.
Yeah, let's hear from James Rogers ahead of that massive game on Thursday night. I'm delighted, as ever, to be joined on the line by James Rogers from Dundalk, the main man for the go-to information on Dundalk FC, and it's a big week for the club and the Lilywhites. A Europa League playoff game at the Aviva on Thursday against opposition from the Faroes. James, how are you keeping?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, just looking forward to the game now.
Yeah, unfortunately, as we know, there won't be spectators at the Aviva, but my God, what a huge opportunity for Dundalk to reach the group stages.
Yeah, like, they've given themselves a great chance. Look, there's no doubt there was a bit of luck with the draw, but I think if you could have handpicked who you'd have in a playoff, if you look through the other games taking place on Thursday, Klaksvík would be the opponents you'd pick, and particularly at home. I have said that. I think the Faroe side would equally have picked Dundalk, so they're you know, you can't take them for granted. But I think, you know, given how the year has gone for Dundalk up to, I suppose, very recently, you know, this was something that you couldn't have imagined. So to have this opportunity now is absolutely amazing, and really turn around what has been, you know, a disappointing year up until now.
Yeah, and it was a surprise how they came through their last round. They were taking on Dynamo Tbilisi of Georgia. Tbilisi were the favourites for that one. Look, if Key had come through that game, maybe 2-1, 1-0, you mightn't have been overly surprised. But to see them win 6-1 on the night shows they're a handy side and they can't be underestimated.
Yeah, they're like, and what made that result probably more, all the more remarkable, was they done it with 29% possession, which just goes to show how, you know, dangerous they are on counter attack. And you know, if you switch off for a second, you know, they obviously can punish you, and it's not been a fluke either. Even in the in their own domestic league, they've scored 5, 6, and 7 in their last three games. So they're a team who know where the back of the net is, and you know, they'll expect to not have a lot of the ball, but they're obviously a fair side. And you know, if you switch off at all, they can punish you, and that's the danger.
Yeah, and look, as you touched on there has been a lot of luck in the draw for Dundalk, because I think Key were supposed to play Slovan Bratislava earlier on, and of course that game fell by the wayside when Slovan posted positive COVID tests. So we could have been looking at Dundalk playing Slovan again on Thursday, and I think the odds would be very, very different if they were taking on Slovan. But they've got Key now, and as we said, they're going to be huge favourites. Do you think Dundalk will be able to cope with this pressure of being favourites, because it's not something they're overly used to in European football?
Yeah, I don't think I'll bother them. It's just another game to them. You know, they went into the Sheriff game and performed very well last week, and I think they'll all know what this means. I think you know, no matter what player you speak to, I think they come in every year in January, and as much as the league being your bread and butter is what's immediately in front of you, Europe is always the aim. And I think, you know, obviously this year with COVID, the league got disrupted a little bit, but, you know, they used the league as a sort of building block to sort of peak around the summer for Europe, with the aim to put themselves in this sort of bracket. And it's a great opportunity for all the players. Obviously, some of them have been there before, but for others, they're obviously listening to the other lads talking about it. So now is their chance to create these memories themselves. And I just actually had a look myself. I don't want to look too far ahead, but if you look at some of the teams already in the Europa League, you know, the possibility of playing your Arsenal, Leicester, Spurs, Roma, Napoli, all these teams, you know, when the draw is made on Friday, you know, that would be very exciting. And, you know, I think any player who doesn't, you know, rise to that occasion, I think, you know, it's definitely one they have to seize, I think.
And financially, what are we looking at in terms of a win here for Dundalk on Thursday?
Well, it's worth in the region of 3 million, which, you know, look, this is a club which has lost in the last two years, 2018 and 2019, since Pete Six came in the region of 1.9 million, you know, for the combined 2 years. And obviously, I don't think that situation is going to improve this year with COVID, and obviously you're down your gate receipts, etc. So it would be massive from that point of view. And obviously, there's the potential to maybe earn more then as you go through, depending on results, etc. But yeah, look, it's I think that's one for the administrators. But you know, it's a great opportunity for everyone. You know, if Giovinoli come in, a complete unknown, just you know, actually 35 days ago today. So you know, he's only in a matter of weeks, and he could be a Europa League group stage manager on the CV, which only obviously two men have done before from this country.
Yeah, and I have to say, if it does come to pass on Thursday that the Dáil qualify for the group stage, I think it's going to be one of the great stories we'll look back on in 10 or 20 years. This unknown that came from Italy, managed the AC Milan summer camps and landed here in Ireland against a lot of criticism. Again, I don't think it was personal from Dundalk fans, but they weren't happy with the way Vinnie Perth was pushed aside, and then to have a complete unknown taken over a side that have dominated domestically, it was very strange at the time. But he's risen above that, and the fans are well and truly behind him now. But he's going to be without Chris Shields on Thursday. We've seen in the cup final last season, Diviva against Shamrock Rovers, what a huge loss he was in the midfield. Makes it that little bit tougher. How do you think Filippo might deal with that? Are we looking at maybe Sean Murray dropping a bit deeper with McElhenney coming into the side, or do you think he might spring some sort of surprise on Thursday night?
I'd imagine it'll be along those lines. I think, you know, several players I think have you know, risen to the task, I suppose, since Filippo has come in, and one of them being Greg Sloggett. And I think while he's been probably a bit more advanced, I think he's well capable. You know, we've seen him maybe for UCD over the years playing a slightly deeper role, and I think you know, Chris Shields is a phenomenal player, and of course any side's going to miss him, but I think Greg Sloggett could do a job there. And obviously if you're bringing in someone like Patrick McElhenney, who could play obviously the 8 or the 10, and likewise with Sean Murray, I think that gives you good options. So I wouldn't be overly concerned. You'd rather have Chris Shields, but you know, what an opportunity for Filippo, because as you say, he's, you know, a nobody in this league a few weeks ago. And I actually was speaking to him the other day. When he was unveiled, everyone was talking to him, but the great Italian coaches, the Contes, the Saris, even Giovanni Trapattoni. And in many ways, I said to him the other day, this could be an achievement on the lines of Roberto Di Matteo, you know, the guy who came into Chelsea and won a Champions League as an interim manager, you know, and it would be nearly similar in terms of achievement if he could do that. Obviously, you'd rather win a Champions League and qualify for the Europa League, but in terms of levels, it's quite an incredible story. And if you compare the Chelsea story, the managers they've had over the years to cut and get to that, I suppose Holy Grail, and Di Matteo brought them there. So I think if Gio Vagnoli could do this, he'd be similar cult status, I'm sure, with the dog for a long time.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point, James. Look, personally, I don't think Dundalk have played their best football in the Aviva in recent years, aside from a couple of cup wins against Cork, where again the performances weren't maybe vintage Dundalk. They have struggled in the Champions League playoff against Legia Warsaw. Obviously, they were slightly disappointing in the cup final last year. Do you think the venue maybe not ideal for Dundalk? They probably would like this one in Oriel, but given the regulations, has to be in the Aviva. But maybe it's more of a negative than positive.
I suppose time will tell. Like, the one thing I will say, a lot of the cup finals were obviously against Cork, will naturally try and stifle you. And you know, similarly, the games against Legia and even Shamrock Rovers last November, they're teams that will have a lot of the ball, and you kind of expect that. And you know, the Dock were missing the likes of Shields and McElhenney for that final as well, which is a big, I'm not making excuses for the defeat. Obviously, Shamrock Rovers deserved that win, but you know, when you take that heartbeat out of your team, it's obviously going to affect your performance no matter who you are. So I think Thursday is a massive opportunity, you know, because I think Key are a side who will naturally sort of let you have the ball at times, and it's now a great opportunity for these guys to, you know, go and show what they can do.
Yeah, and look, there was an opportunity for a couple of players on Sunday to throw their names into the hat for the game, because without wanting to be disrespectful to the players that did play, it was really a second string 11 Dundalk fielded against Shamrock Rovers the other night. Did anyone really stand out there? I know going forward with the ball at times, I thought Dundalk were quite good, and Adu was one that stood out in terms of in possession, but Maybe his tracking back left a lot to be desired, particularly for the opening two goals. Do you feel there was anyone that maybe just put their hand up there on Sunday for at least to be thought about for a selection on Thursday?
It was a difficult one to judge, obviously. I thought in patches, I thought maybe Cameron Dummigan did okay. Obviously, Jordan Flowers, I thought he finished the game well. But you were dealing with a side who a lot of them hadn't played a lot of football. Some of them were playing out of position. You know, for the likes of Adua, Joshua Gass, Will Patching, it was their first league start. So it was probably a lot, you know, to go in against a team that were as in form as Shamrock Rovers. So, you know, and maybe if you're adding them into a more experienced side, they'll shine that a little bit more. But when you make so many changes with so many players who hadn't played in so long, and I include Dummigan and Flores in that, it's very, very hard for you to shine as much as you'd like. So I don't think anyone will have done enough to maybe make Giovagnoli think, well, right, do I need to put this guy in my starting 11? But, you know, they're obviously in the squad for a reason and they're all talented, so maybe one of them can make a contribution off the bench come Thursday night.
And look, one player that really did stand out on Sunday was Jack Byrne. He was phenomenal. Stephen Kenny was there watching him. He's called him up to his Ireland 25-man squad today. Is he the best player in the league at the moment?
He's so very talented. Like, funny enough, I actually think the best player this season is another Shamrock Rovers player who didn't play on Sunday. For me, if you're picking a player of the year, for me it's Roberto Lopez. I just think he's been phenomenal this season. Different type of player to Bourne, obviously, and I'm not taking it. I just think Lopez, he's been a rock at the back for him this season. He's come up with big goals both domestically and in Europe, and I think for me he's been the standout player that I've seen so far this year. I think Bourne, no doubt in his talent, but the way he did go through a little patch there, obviously he was brilliant on Sunday, but he did go through that period where he maybe just wasn't at his best. I think he admit that himself. I know he was struggling with a slight back problem. But listen, we'd all, as League of Ireland fans, love to see him shine for Ireland, and hopefully he can get his opportunity now, because there's a lot of big games coming up for the national team.
Yeah, I think that performance against AC Milan seems to have sparked him back into life, and that fourth goal on Sunday was just absolutely brilliant at Oriel. Great, and what you say about Pico Lopez is correct, and he's got himself an international call-up today as well, so great to see a few more international caps been handed out to League of Ireland players. But James, thanks for joining us on the show today, and look, best wishes to Dundalk on Thursday. I think it's fair to say most League of Ireland neutrals are going to be behind the Lily Whites for that one.
Yeah, I think it's a great story for the league, and I know some people question, you know, is it good for the league and how is it good for the league. One thing I will say is the league actually needs a new sponsor at the moment, and if you have a club in the Europa League, it obviously does great things for, because look, we all know most football fans in Ireland don't actually follow the league, but it can raise the publicity of it, and that can only help when you're going looking for a new sponsor, because obviously SFC and Tristy's is up, and you know, if you can attract a good enough sponsor, you know, that can have a knock-on effect in terms of prize money, etc. as well. So hopefully that you know, this can, if this story goes as well as we all hope it does, it'll have a knock-on effect for the rest of the league.
Yeah, and at a time where champagne football is the hot topic and scandals within administration levels of Irish football, I think everyone needs a bit of a pick-me-up, and this would certainly be a positive for Irish football. James, thanks for joining us on the show. Best wishes for Thursday night.
No problem. Thanks, Ciarán.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Yeah, great to hear from James Rogers once again, and a big, big best of luck to Dundalk on Thursday. Gary, go on, I know you're dying to wish Dundalk the best of luck on Thursday.
Look, you know, I wouldn't say I'm dying to wish, dying for it, but it's always great to see teams, League of Ireland teams, do well in Europe. I'll be watching the game with interest, and I'll be hoping that they do very well and get into the group stages. It'll be great for the league. But as has been said during the week there, not as great for the league as people like to let on. You know, other clubs in the league don't, it's not going to change the lives of anyone else other than really Dundalk. So, as I said towards the start of the show, it's not the be all and end all for the league either. But it's great achievement for Dundalk, and fair play to them. And maybe they'll be able to throw a few licks of paint on Oriel Park as well.
I knew that was coming. I just knew it. But, look, we might.
I think £3 million might be able to buy a few tins of brilliant white paint and do it up a bit.
And it'd be nice if we could get £3 million in the pot for our charity bet. As you know, folks, we really are struggling this season. We've only had one winning bet all year back in February, thanks to John Breyer. So we've got about £60 in the pot. But we are splitting that amongst two charities this year, Pieta House, and we're going to give some money to Autism Services in Dundalk as well after the sad loss of a young supporter last year. But we need to try and get motoring now, Gary. There's not long left in the season, and we want to try and give these charities a good few pounds. So let's see if we can get the ball rolling this week. As ever, our charity bet is kindly sponsored by bar1racing.com. They put a tenner up every week. We split a fiver each way. And Gary's going to give us his charity bet now. What have you got for us, Gaz?
I'm going to go with a four-team accumulator, very basic. It's going to be a Dundalk win, a Shamrock Rovers win, and a St. Pat's win. And then finally, I'm going to go Drogheda -1 against Athlone at home.
Well, would you believe it? I've gone the exact same way in terms of teams, but the only thing, I'm just going to stick with the simple win for the Drogs. Look, I do expect them to put a few past that loan, but I'm going to keep it nice and simple, go with a fourfold. So just to recap there, that's going to be Drogheda to beat Athlone for myself, Pats to win against Cork, Shamrock Rovers to win against Sligo, and Dundalk to win against Finn Harps. Well, Gary has gone the exact same way, only he goes Drogheda -1 against Athlone. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we can get a few pound in the charity pot. But that's where we round off the show, Gary. Thanks for joining me once again, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, most certainly did. Really enjoyed it. Wasn't as nervous as I was the first time. But thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, and as ever, folks, thanks very much for tuning in. I hope we've got a couple of new listeners this week after our Roddy Collins special. It was great to see such positive numbers, such positive feedback. So again, if you want to leave any feedback or reaction to tonight's show after you've listened, please do so on our Twitter, our Facebook page, or on Instagram as well. And as ever, we really appreciate anyone that subscribes, let it be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Do hit the subscribe button or the follow button. And again, if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we really would appreciate that. But that's it from this week. We've got some big name guests coming up over the next couple of weeks. So as I said, it's well worth your time subscribing and giving us a follow wherever you get your podcast, because we've got some really good stuff coming up over the next few weeks. Potentially a Roddy Collins podcast special #2 as well. So yeah, I would suggest you subscribe. But for tonight, that's where we're going to sign off. Gary, thanks for joining me. And folks, we'll see you again next week.